Well, good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs, and I think I'm ready to disappoint you for this particular show on Free Case Love Education Talk Radio. Our guest, Amanda Kochan from Edmentum, has not called in, and I'm hoping she's okay. Sometimes people just forget, okay, or something comes up and they forget to let me know. It's no big deal. We simply schedule, so I hope she's okay. But if you tuned in for this show about Edmentum, we will reschedule it. Okay, and I'm just blabbing here, hoping that she remembers to call in, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. So we'll make sure we reschedule it. I want to thank you for listening. Oh, she just called. There you go. There she is. Incredible. All right. So now I can turn off the music and get the show going. Hi, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs, Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. And happy September. It's September 1st. And this show, as I just mentioned, is with Amanda Kochan, who I hope I'm pronouncing her last name right. She is the Chief Strategy Officer of Edmentum, all about virtual learning. She's going to tell us all about that. We're going to specifically categorize the show as high human-centered virtual learning, human-centered virtual learning. How has the pandemic, I can talk today, changed virtual learning? And it really has, and it. Edmentum's right there at the center of it, so we're going to have a nice conversation with Amanda. All right, and we're going to archive this show over at ace-ed.org. That's ace-ed.org. That's the home website of our American Consortium for Equity in Education. If you go over there, you'll see everything we do. It's all linked, teacher-retention.com, which is so important these days, SELtoday.org, all about social-emotional learning, equally important, I might add, top concern of everybody these days. And we do publish a magazine called SEL Today Digest, if people are interested in that. That's also part, that's over there at SELtoday.org. It's also part of our bigger magazine, which is over at ace-ed.org, and that's Equity and Access Pre-K-12, our online journal. It's the official journal of our consortium, and the only one focusing on equity and access in pre-K-12. We're pretty proud of it, and we get a lot of readership, and I hope you go over there, click on the cover, and check it out. You might also know that we have a Excellence in Equity Awards program for pre-K-12, and you're invited to nominate yourself, your college, your school, companies you work with, et cetera, products you use, et cetera, et cetera. And that's under the awards icon, awards. Over at ace-ed.org, and also, of course, we're going to archive this podcast over there under podcasts. Okay, ace-ed.org is what you need. The second thing you need is edmentum.com, and here's the Chief Strategy Officer, the one, the only, Amanda Kochan. And Amanda, did I pronounce your last name right?
You did. Well done.
Thanks, pal. I appreciate that. Where are you today?
I live in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Lucky you. You have a spare room because we're looking to take a vacation. Okay? That's one of my favorite places. You are so lucky. That's great. Wow.
I am lucky. I grew up in northern New Mexico and spent years away in California and then New York, and am fortunate enough to have married a lovely person who brought me back home about 10 years ago. So I've been here for the better part of 10 years now with my family.
Well, you did good with the spousal unit, I got to tell you, because living in Santa Fe, I think, is everybody's dream, okay?
That's exactly right.
We live in Maine, and whenever I say to people who live in Maine, they kind of go, oh, that's so nice, because everybody has good memories of Maine if they've ever been up here along the coast. It's really beautiful. But we've been to Santa Fe a couple of times, and that's just a special place. It really is.
You're
a lucky lady.
It's a special place.
Thank you.
I think so, too.
At 7,000 feet, am I correct? 7,000?
Yeah, 6, yeah. A little bit north of that, but yeah, we're at 7,000 feet, and you know, we like to. Denver gets all the press for being the highest place, but no, Santa Fe is definitely there.
Santa Fe is higher. Okay, that's all I can tell
it
you.
It is.
All right. And you're right. Denver Mile High Stadium or mile, that's nothing compared to Santa Fe.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's so funny. Tell it, you're the director, you're the Chief Strategy Officer. And by the way, I want to ask you something. You used to, hold on. My darn asthma, pardon me, okay? You used to work on something called the New Teachers Project. Okay, what is that?
I just saw that here.
What is it?
About 10 years working for an organization that was originally founded about now 25 years ago, which was called the New Teacher Project. And it was really an alternative certification program that was working on taking folks, a lot of mid-career changers at the time, like thinking way back, and helping to train them up and get them into underserved schools, schools where they had trouble recruiting, retaining, finding, having, you know, really access to excellent teachers. And so I was chief strategy officer there for about a decade. We transitioned that business, you know, that company, still tremendous. TNTP is what it's now called because, you know, we moved from being predominantly a teacher prep program to being really a full-service consulting organization that serves the nation's largest school districts and focuses both on making sure that they have access to tremendous resources in terms of teachers and leaders and others, but also focuses a lot on what are the academics, what's the content that we're giving and putting in front of kids and making sure that, you know, particularly kids who often don't have access to great teaching and to great content do. And so that's TNTP. I left TNTP a couple of years ago and joined Edmentum as chief strategy officer. Same role, very different business, obviously.
Yeah, that's okay.
You know, really because I was sort of, you know, in enticed by thinking about what is the role of technology specifically
exactly.
in, you know,
exactly.
changing outcomes and opportunities for kids.
Well, I'll tell you, I didn't know TNTP. And if you know them, I would love to stay in touch with you and get to know them. Okay, that's not what
Absolutely.
We're going to talk about
yeah.
today.
Yeah, no, I still spend a bunch of time with them. Yep.
Thank you. I'm going to tap into you on that one because both of your professions within education have been incredibly timely. They're right on target for what we need these days: virtual learning, the best new teachers, the right rigorous curriculum, etc. So I think you and I are going to become close friends here, Amanda. Okay, we're right
that
on target with this stuff. Okay, it really would be. So thank you. I'm going to ask you more about that. Let's swing over to Edmentum, okay? Quick over, slow over you, it doesn't matter, of what Edmentum does.
Yeah, Edmentum is a company that was founded, you know, a little over 60 years ago and was really focused, Edmentum and its, you know, the companies that have become part of Edmentum, we're all really focused on what's the sort of early applicability of technology into the education space.
Yeah.
How do you make sure that, you know, use technology for what it's good at in terms of delivering assessment, content, curriculum, you know, to kids wherever learning occurs. So whether that's physically in a school building or not. And so that's really the focus of Edmentum. We're a learning technology company. We have, you know, a long history in the education space. I would say, I think
yeah.
one of the things that's wonderful about Edmentum, like TNTP, is it really is predominantly made up of educators. Our CEO is a former teacher. So it is an ed tech company that leans very heavy on the learning part of education technology. And so we really do think of ourselves as a learning company as much as anything, even though we're, you know, very much powered by enabling technology.
And by the way, your CEO is a female. Okay, which is very important
she
these days.
Is.
Yeah, I'd like to make that point because education is, I don't know the exact statistic, but it's probably 80-85% female, okay? But it's very important to recognize the leaders in the field. And in actual school districts, leadership tends to be percentage-wise more male, yet the employees, the teachers, tend to be much more female. All right, percentage-wise, and it's I like to highlight when companies have when companies and school districts have female leadership because it's more reflective of what the whole industry and what the whole profession is like. So, congrats on that, Amanda. You're a leader too, so they know what they're doing on that. You're the chief strategy officer. Where do you see it going? Okay. And we're going to talk specifically, you know, about how the pandemic changed everything. I mean, I said it before, the things you've chosen to do within education are really timely things. You have a good, I'm going to follow you because you have a good knack on knowing what's timely. Okay. And just, talk about, okay, where we are and where we see things going right now, because you said, you know, technology has a lot of applications in education. And the big one over the last 25, 30 years has been using it to teach kids, okay? But Even that's changing. We still use it, obviously, to teach kids, but the use of technology is expanding, again, into like things like virtual education. So as chief strategy officer, you don't have to give away any corporate secrets. Where do you see it all going? Technology and all
that
sort of
thing. Yeah, and it's a great question. I mean, I haven't always been right on time. I've often been a little too early. So, you know, I would say going back into like 2010, 2013.
Amanda will manage your investments, ladies and gentlemen. You want to meet Amanda. She will manage your investments.
Well, they always say, they always say being early is the same as being wrong. But, you know, I even at TNTP, I spent a lot of time really, you know, in classrooms. I just a tremendous amount of time with the teams looking at, you know, what were kids actually doing? How were teachers teaching? How could we really think about, you know, making the role of teaching just sustainable? And I became pretty convinced back in 2012, 2013, like a lot of people did, that the role of technology was going to be really positive in terms of making just teaching more sustainable, right? Like even within a classroom. And so, you know, we spent a lot of time with my team really thinking about, at the time we were talking a lot about blended learning and how can blended and, you know, we talked a lot about, like, there were tremendous barriers, though. Like, changing practice is very difficult at the classroom level. It's hard within teaching. It was very hard to get folks to think about how the teaching teams could look different or how you could extend the reach of teachers or how you could really embrace technology, not as something that you put kids on to the side while you did, you know, small group work, but really how could the technology integrate. I would also say, like, some of the technology was not quite there yet. Now, you fast forward. And there were tremendous barriers, right? So, like, not everybody had one-to-one programs. There weren't enough devices. Teachers weren't trained on technology. The schools of ed really weren't training teachers how to
That's
use
right.
technology. It was still very very paper-based, very sort of, you know, what we've always trained over the last, you know, 50 years. It didn't look all that much different. I think the big thing that shifted for me, and it's one of the reasons I was excited to join Edmentum, was it was the first time that I saw some of those sort of fundamental macro barriers of how we think about making teaching more sustainable shift. And it was two things, right? The pandemic brought with it massive disruption. It was a shock to the entire educational system that further exposed lots of things, including all of sort of pre-existing inequities. But one of the things it did do, because it was such a big shock, was it accelerated, you know, the adoption of technology. Like we were everybody, kids, families, teachers were forced to change. And forced to try things that, you know, if we were just left to our own, we probably wouldn't have tried. So the biggest barrier, I mean, that was one of the big things, right?
That's
all
right.
of a sudden, huge deployments of technology, one-to-one programs, devices, Wi-Fi, you know, access became became ubiquitous, right? Now, it doesn't mean we don't have work still to do. We can talk about that. But the availability of devices and the comfort of teachers, in a lot of ways, forced to get comfortable with technology, you know, were barriers that got knocked down pretty quickly.
Without question.
You know, lots
of
surveys.
I got to say something. All the things you're saying, you know, it's so in line with the way we think here. I don't know if you heard me at the beginning. Our company is the American Consortium for Equity in Education, and we even publish a magazine called Equity in Access. And We learned, and you're right, we're so in agreement here, okay? Technology, this is the way of the world, okay? And I always make a joke, people call it ed tech. They say, oh, well, I'm in educational technology. Well, I always remind people, we never said I'm in educational chalk when I was using chalk, okay?
Right.
I'm in the educational chalk business. I use chalk all the time, okay? We don't have to say ed tech anymore. Education is technology with the human touch, you know, of educators trained to use it and still be those wonderful, compassionate people that we need to get the points across. And, you know, you're so dead on with this that the pandemic forced us to come to grips with this and realize that this is the way of the world. Okay, we're going to do this.
Yeah,
and the
and
other
I think
thing,
the genie,
which I said,
well, the genie's a bit out of the bottle,
I agree
right?
with you. Yeah, I agree with you. The schools of education, okay, and I can't tell you how many superintendents I talk to these days who I say, what school do you use to get teachers for your school? And they say, well, we're very close to them because half the time the professors are over here trying to figure out what's going on in our classrooms. Okay? And
right.
the point is they were always lagging behind on this. okay? And kids understood how to use technology in classroom because their teachers used it, and then they became teachers, okay? So,
right.
You know, it's the way of the world these days. You're right. Everybody follow Amanda. Just simply get in line, move to Santa Fe, follow Amanda, and wherever she goes, just follow her, and we'll be in good shape, okay?
Yeah, I think folks are catching up, though, right? Like, you're starting to see the schools of ed. You're seeing superintendents, you're seeing school leaders really begin to think about what's the role when I curate technology into the way that I think about teaching and learning. What is the role that it can play? And I think one of the things that's important and why we, you know, titled the paper around virtual learning specifically, you know, about being human-centered is because it really the educator has to be at the center of all of this still. You know, learning is still a fundamental human endeavor. And
absolutely.
And the technology should be there to assist and enable and to make sustainable. But the choices that get made for kids, with families, you know, still have that educator at the center. And I think that's really important. I will say, like, you know, for all of the, you know, there is that move during the pandemic, you know, there was just this massive move to emergency remote. And one of the things that, you know, we really saw early on was those folks that were better prepared in terms of their embracing of technology, their training of their teachers, the ways that they actually thought, I mean, even folks who had, you know, a virtual program that was sort of a sustainable virtual program for even a portion of their children were much better prepared to really stand up what we would call a higher quality virtual experience for kids versus those that didn't approach it as something that was sustainable. They were in school, they were out of school, there was no consistency. You know, and unfortunately what we saw, which is, you know, probably not surprising to anybody, is that move to emergency remote, which is distinctly different from high quality virtual, really left mm-hmm. huge swaths of students without access to consistent, sustainable learning opportunities. And we see it in the results. You know, I think Tom Kane out of Harvard did a wonderful job really studying effectively what is the result of emergency remote learning, which is not a consistent learning experience. And so, you know, one of the reasons I think I get asked a lot, you know, why did we produce this paper? Why now? And part of it was really to put a stake in the ground on what a lot of kids experienced in that emergency remote. It is not sustainable virtual. And we wanted to sort of make the case on, you know, after having done this for many, many years as a company and with many of our customers and with others in the field, that are in this space of thinking about how do you give equal access to kids, whether it's a rural kid that wants to take a course mm-hmm. that's not offered in their place,
yep.
Or if it's a family that really for them, you know, having a virtual, the flexibility of a virtual option is important, you know, showing that those are possible and they are different than what, you know, a lot of us experienced with our
and
own kids
work.
In the sort of back and forth of the pandemic.
And they work. And you said something that was so important. You said a lot of things important, but I wrote this down. I don't know whether you knew you were saying it, but you said it. You said, learning is a human endeavor. All right. And what struck
yes.
me about the way you said that was you didn't say teaching is a human endeavor. You said learning is a human endeavor. And that really, and I've been saying this for years, we call the profession, I'm a teacher. But in reality, it's not about that. It's about learning, okay? It's not about the teaching. It's about the learning, okay? We're learning specialists, okay? We're learning facilitators,
right. yeah.
okay? It's the learning that's the human endeavor, okay? And the way we get to that, by all means possible, is incredible. I love the way you said that a few minutes ago, okay? And the other thing, about now you mentioned this is the title of the show, Human-Centered Virtual Learning, okay? And I think that's what we're talking about here is that we want to use technology, but it has to have a humanistic attitude towards it. It's not something cold. It's not like some science fiction movie, okay, where the robots take over. You saw that movie, I'm sure. Okay, the Terminator, the robots took over, all right? That's not what we're talking about here. The Edmentum robots are not going to take over the world, are they, Amanda? Are they?
No.
No, thank you. Good.
No.
Okay, but they are going to help. Okay, talk about that. This whole idea of human-centered virtual learning, and because to me, virtual is going to be the way to go. We are in total agreement here. I mean, I talked to a school district yesterday. They're building a brand new school, K-12 school, okay, for 142 students in a town of 206 people in Wyoming. They're building a brand new school for K-12, okay? It's so rural, they're 4 hours from, 4 or 5 hours from Laramie, okay? It's a town called Ten Sleep, okay, which was named that way because it took 10 nights to get there in the old days, okay? It was an Indian post. It took 10 Sleep, Wyoming. They're building a brand new school. Those kids in Ten Sleep, as an example, deserve the same access to great educators and great learning as a kid in downtown New York City, downtown L.A., or downtown Santa Fe, okay?
Right.
And the whole thing is based on the humanity of it all, okay? We're going to use the technology but not lose the humanity, and I want you to just – now that I've given you that, Professor, talk to us about that, Professor. Professor Copeland,
yeah,
ladies and gentlemen.
When we think about, you know, human-centered, we're really talking about, you know, starting for us, it's both about what is happening and what is the experience that students are having. It's also about what's the experience that educators are having
yeah.
and that teachers are having. And how do we support both?
Wow.
Not forgetting, obviously, the importance of, you know, just family choice and options in terms of what's best for their kid. I think, you know, we see lots of kids you know, really thrive in a virtual environment. It's not for everybody. It's not to say it is for everybody, but we do actually think that, you know, it can be part of most students, when done well, it can be part of most kids' experiences, like really thinking about how you curate a virtual with in-person, you know, so there's sort of a continuum of you know, a student who really just wants access to a course. And I would say, you know, the perception is that's predominantly rural kids. The truth is it's not. I want to tell you a little bit of a story. I was working on what became a fairly long research paper, which we called, when I was at TNTP, called The Opportunity Myth. And we published that in 2018. So around 2016, I was walking through a series of schools doing academic reviews with my team, where we would sit in classrooms and we observe classrooms, and we'd really were trying to understand, like, how's the curriculum being implemented on the ground, and then producing reports and talking to superintendents about, like, you know, here's what you think you're implementing, here's what's actually happening in classrooms, here's the gap in terms of you know, whether kids are being given opportunities to participate in grade level assignments and what happens when they're not given that opportunity. And one of the things that I walked away from a couple of those classrooms thinking is, particularly at the high school level, there's a lot of kids, and these were all, you know, big city school districts. A lot of these kids actually in their building don't have access to a full catalog of courses.
Mm-hmm.
They're
yeah.
given access to whatever is sort of the, you know, frankly, the lowest common denominator, right? There's no AP, there's
yeah.
no honors, there's no, you know, you take a history course, it's just history. It's not specified at all. And then you look at, you know, your sort of wealthier school districts and the level of opportunity that is given to those kids. I mean, not before you even get to what families can afford to do on the side, right? In terms of extracurricular academic opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I think one of the things that is really powerful about thinking about virtual is you really can deliver a full course catalog no matter where the kid is, whether that kid is fully enrolled in virtual or whether that kid is, you know, sitting in New York City,
but right.
their building doesn't offer, you know, AP
That's
biology
right.
because there's only a couple of kiddos that want to take that. And so, you know, when you think about the power of virtual in particular, you know, I think that's there. I you know, I think it's important to recognize a few things as we think about choice and flexibilities and options and how do you curate learning opportunities for kids. And that's that even though through the pandemic we had lots of mixed experiences with virtual, coming out of it, it's tremendous to see how positive kids and families are about the role that they see that virtual can play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's well over 60% of parents, particularly high school parents, believe and expect that there's going to be a virtual learning option, whether that's fully virtual or access to courses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, teachers are more open to using technology. I think as we think about, you know, school districts, they're starting to think about how do I offer these? And it's not just the virtual school to the side. It's like, how do we think about the journey of a student where they can take, you know, a course in their building. They can then take a course that's not offered in their building. They can still physically sit in their building. You know, they can use a paraprofessional to help with that classroom. But they use, you know, a course so that they can dial in and have a virtual experience. And that virtual experience, I think when you talk to, when we started producing the paper, we spent a lot of time asking people, like, when you think of virtual, what do you think of? And folks would say, well, I think of sort of a lonely kid kind of working through an online program, but I know it's not that, right? I know that, you know, there is an educator that can be part of it and is part of it. And so that's what we wanted to bring to the front is, you know, how do you think about the ability now in technology to really create community mm-hmm. among peers, among educators? And so that's what we focused on, you know, in this paper in particular, is really painting a picture of what's what could a student experience look like, and what does that look like for educators too, in terms of the difference between teaching in a sort of traditional brick and mortar versus teaching online.
And let me ask this, and all I agree with that again wholeheartedly. Okay, when Edmentum goes into a school or a school district, okay, what are they actually selling to the school district? Okay, all these things you're talking about are absolutely wonderful. Okay, and they really are. But what are they putting together for a school district? Is it mostly just in terms of virtual learning? Here's what we can do for you.
That's a great question.
Yeah, no,
I mean, so Edmentum has a fairly broad portfolio of offerings.
They do.
We have diagnostic assessments. We have an adaptive learning program, which is predominantly in the early elementary and middle school grades, although certainly can span from K-12, depending on, you know, where a student is. What I'm speaking to you right now is the sort of part of the work that Edmentum does to really bring capacity into school districts and frankly, wherever kids are being taught, right? We certainly serve plenty of after-school programs as well and sort of non-traditional educational settings. You know, when we talk about virtual, what Edmentum does is, you know, we'll go into a school district and work with that team, often the superintendent, the CAO, you know, that sort of cabinet, to really talk about, like, who are their students, what are the goals that they have for students, and how does virtual and access to courses, right, a broader course catalog fit into that. We can talk a little bit about sort of why people, what problems folks are trying to solve in sort of simple terms. But we come in with a full catalog of well over 500 courses that are standard aligned and, you know, modern and curated with tons of, you know, sort of engaging content to make sure that, you know, it's an interesting U.S. history course that will be two semesters that, a 10th grader can enroll in. You know, in addition to that, so we can come in and say, we can get you the content, the curriculum you need. In addition to that, we can work with you to help provide a teacher where you don't have one. So we have several hundred teachers who are certified in every state. not all of them in every state, but we have teachers for every state that can be your teacher of record. And so we provide that. We provide then a whole series of services on top of that, everything from grading services to we do a lot actually of professional development to help a district's build capacity of their own teachers. So where we work with a district and we say, we're going to come in and help you stand up a virtual program. To start with, you're going to use our teachers, but over time, we're actually going to mentor your teachers to learn how to teach virtual or hybrid. Yeah. And so we really think a lot about how do we support public education and bring capacity to it. You know, we're not really trying to enroll their kids in our program. We're really trying to help them stand up their program.
Right. And by the way, there's about 13,000. Yeah, there's 13,000 school districts, and you guys are in about 8,000 of them in one way or the other. Is that correct?
We are in about half of the nation's school districts.
Think of that. That's a
with
lot.
One of our programs or another. Yeah, it is a lot. But it's their program, and I think that's really important, right? Like we work hard to make sure that we're supporting their program and their goals. And so, you know, whether that's right now, retaining enrollment is really important, right? You've got this pressure from families who really want this as an option.
You ain't kidding.
So how do I, you know,
You there? Amanda, what happened to you?
And I don't have a Spanish teacher. Can you provide a Spanish teacher and the curriculum for my kids? Yes, we can do that. So I think the obviously the other one is, you know, can you help us stand up a full program, a fully virtual school, and help us get that running? And we do that too. So it's a pretty broad continuum.
It is.
You know, it falls into certain patterns, right? Like there's obviously patterns of need. But we try to be as, frankly, as responsive as possible.
Well, you're listening.
I mean,
you're
one
listening
example
and
of
you
that,
create the thing that they need. It's that simple.
We do. Yeah. I mean, one example of that is during the pandemic, we had, you know, our partners were really struggling to keep track of their kids and make sure that their kids had what they needed to show up and be there for virtual learning. And, you know, we actually stood up a service around student success coaches. And so we have a team of folks who will work with a district to make sure that, you know, in addition to the teachers, we are providing folks who are working with a cohort of kids to make sure that they have their schedules and their access and that they're really their person to make sure that they're set up for success and the family set up for success.
That is excellent. You know, and I want to just say, you said something before that struck me, and we're really concerned about this. We're real concerned about teacher retention. All right, we're really concerned about this, and I know you are too. Okay, and you said something interesting that struck me. You said the experience you provide, okay, all right, we want the educator's experience to be as good as the kid's experience, all right? I'm paraphrasing there, but my point is,
right. You
know, the teachers are stressed out, and if they're not happy at their job and if the school isn't providing them what they need, okay, to be good teachers, they're going to think about leaving. Okay, they are.
For sure. Like
50% of teachers are thinking of leaving, and we have nobody to replace them. That's where the virtual comes in, on that side. But also making the technology work to make their lives easier is a teacher retention thing. It's not just
100%
for the kid.
Agree with that.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's amazing. A lot of companies don't go off on that tangent, but it really is. Everything we can do, and you guys do this all the time, to make the teacher experience better, okay, it is extremely important these days. You know, it's just we got to talk more about this. We got to go for right now, but Amanda, I'm going to get in touch with you, and we're going to do more. Is that okay? This is fun.
That sounds terrific.
I hope you had a good time too. It's great to know you. I'm sorry we're just meeting
you
right
too.
Now.
You too. Great to be in touch. Thank you for the conversation.
We will be. And enjoy gorgeous New Mexico. I'll enjoy gorgeous Maine, and you'll enjoy gorgeous New Mexico. How's that sound?
That sounds good. Have a happy Labor Day weekend.
You too. Have a good one, and we'll talk soon, okay? Thank you, Amanda. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. Wow. What an articulate lady. Wow. That was great. Amanda Konkin is the Chief Strategy Officer for Edmentum at edmentum.com, and I suggest you go over there. Okay, really good stuff. Okay, she's a good thinker. I got to tell you, we're going to archive the show over at ace-ed.org. That's where everything we do is linked or is. Okay, please check it all out. My name is Larry Jacobs. This is for K-12 Education Talk Radio, and I can't thank you enough for being here. We'll talk after Labor Day, so please have a safe and happy one. Thanks for listening.